everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the casino head.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. And this time, we're going to a casino?
This time, we're going to be playing some games.
Playing some of those
rare ones where we play some games. Psych. Gotcha. No. We are going to a casino in a sense. Because what do they have in casinos?
Games. Yeah. Also, you could go to a casino for one of these. That could be the thing that you do.
Oh, yeah. Because we are talking about gamifying roles in the action, i.e. mini games, like if your adventuring party went to a casino to blow off some steam, a lot of mini game potential there. Mm-hmm. All right, but first let's define what we mean like by lol. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to answer the question of like, why a mini game? Why not just talk? And then the narrative benefits of gamifying these little moments. And then just some reasons why to skip or rip it. The mini game, I mean. Skip or rip a mini game. Mm-hmm. So, when there is a lull, what the heck are we talking about?
Yeah.
If you're familiar...
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're familiar with D&D, you would know it as downtime.
Yeah, and I think it's called downtime in a lot of other games. Shadow Dark calls it carousing. Lots of games have a specific term for it, and sometimes like unique mechanics for it. When the adventuring party is not out on an adventure, like what are they doing? What are they doing when they're not doing that?
Right. And I think that definition is a little limited, which is why we were calling it lulls, mm-hmm. is because a lull can also be between, like, the bandit attack on the road and, like, the entrance to the dungeon, right? Like, your party stops and rests.
Yeah.
That's a lull.
Like, natural lull that happens a lot is, yeah, like the short rest or the long rest, mm-hmm. that your party is going to be like, well, we want to pop one of those so that we, you know,
right.
so we get our hit points and our spell slots back so I can, you know, like try and fix something or, you know, make sure we have enough torches for the dungeon that we think is coming up, whatever. It doesn't have to be, although it also is the, like when you go back to town after an mm-hmm. adventure and yes. you've got like, you know, because RPGs are a weird medium, it doesn't have to follow the same like rules as a movie or a book. You could go back to town and potentially spend years,
yeah.
you know, before you go on another adventure. And so like what happens during that time is a lull. But then also, yeah, just like stopping for lunch on the way to the dungeon could also be a lull. And something you might just blow past. But what we're talking about here is the opportunity for it to be something more, for you to gamify it a little bit, get some mm-hmm. role-playing out of it, and, you know, roll the dice maybe in a different way.
Yeah. And so, yeah, very wide definition we're talking about here. Many ways to use it, too, a break in the action or a shift to shift like the tone or story, be like, okay, you guys, mm-hmm. you know, defeated this, you know, obstacle or like, you know, this lieutenant of the big bad, you go back to town and like years pass
yeah.
before the next thing happens. So let's do a little, you know,
what happens?
What were you guys up to?
Time,
did you stay yeah. together, etc. Right.
Did you get married?
Right. And so, like, those can be mini games, and I think there's a strong argument for those to be mini games.
Mm-hmm. To gamify them somehow.
Right. Because, like, I mean, you can just like narrate it through and be like, you know, the game master can ask a bunch of questions and the player will answer them. But you can gamify it in a way that like you feel, or me, I guess, not necessarily you or everybody, but I would feel comfortable like actually giving out some bonuses or like, you know, some mechanical benefits. Because in these lulls, and if you use the base mechanics of the game, it's a little bit harder, and like you can find yourself accidentally giving like too strong of a buff, or yeah, you know, accidentally breaking the game because you're like, oh yeah, crafting, you can craft, what do you want to craft? I want to craft the ultimate weapon. Yeah. I rolled a 20.
Yeah. So now you have to give it to me. It'd be good if there were some like rails to,
yeah,
to follow, some structure to follow that would prevent something crazy like that from happening. Because that does kind of, in this, like, if you do say, like, you know, complete like a chapter of a big campaign, mm-hmm, and it makes sense that like, well, we would go back in like winter in, mm-hmm, our village before the next thing, or we don't even know what the next thing is, yeah, going to be, and then time pulls out like that. Well, I don't know, like anything could happen in that time. So yeah, it's it'd be good if in that time you say like, well, I don't stay, I go out on a quest for, you know, the magical helmet that makes my armor class so high that you can't hit me,
right? And then like, that's a cool thing. As a game master, I would like to follow that thread.
Yeah.
But then, like, do we say, okay, well, we're going to have to meet in between this session and the next session, and I'm going to run a one-shot specifically for you.
Yeah, play that out. Or, you know, you want to, like, gamify that in a different way. And also, like, that's an extreme example. Mm-hmm. The, you know, it's just like a night in town after a successful little dungeon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Players would probably, you know, characters, I want to spend some of the coin I brought back. My sword sucks. Yeah. You know, I'm sick of doing, you know, just like D6 damage on everything. I'd like a better weapon, and not like in a crazy sense, but like, can I spend some of this gold on a better sword?
Mm-hmm.
And like, yes, you could do that. You could just like open the book and be like, how much, what do you want? Yeah. Like, oh, I want a battle axe. Okay. It's this much gold. Mm-hmm. And do you have that? Okay, yes, you buy it, and now you can just have that on your character sheet. You could do that, right, and that's easy enough. Or you could, you know...
And you could do, like, a cool little mini game like Sokka's meteorite sword. Yeah,
Sokka's Master. That's right? A great episode.
And this is why it would be, like, a nice way to do a mini... Or a mini game would fit perfectly for that, because your character might not be built like a smithy, mm-hmm, right? Like, they can't, you know... swing hammer good. Right? Because they're, you know, I don't know, a rogue or something, you know, more stealthy than Bronzy.
They're a sneaky guy. And...
But, like, that's a cool idea and it should be rewarded. And so you could come up with a little mini game where it's like, you know, screw your stats and, like, your strength stat, which is negative. Screw that. Mm-hmm. It's more about, like, you know, precision and knowledge. So, like, you know, let's do find or steal, you know, a book on smithing. All right, give me, you know, a roll. Okay, you succeeded that. So now you get a plus to your smithing. Like, you can come up with all these, you know, bonuses that they get. And then, like, roll a d6. If you get a 10 or better, you make a really good sword.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's not a game-breaking sword. It's just, you know, the sword you want.
Right.
And it's special. So, yeah. A mini game, because like players are going to want a reward for role playing, and good ideas should be rewarded. It's a lot easier to come up with a simple system rather than fit it into the already existing system. Like, that's something that I think we ran in a lot too with like Afterlife and like the complete freedom. And then players are like, well, I want this thing. And it's like, okay. Let's see. I guess that's kind of this. So, yeah, like, I'll give you a plus three.
How do I give it to you?
And then, like, you know, sometimes it was good and the system worked, and then other times it was very game breaking. It's like, fuck, I shouldn't have given that to you, and I don't know how to take it away. So yeah, the mini game, it's also, I don't think we hit on this enough, is like doing a mini game, like a night carousing in town, right? Like, it's a break for the characters who like just went through a dungeon and probably killed some things. Like,
yeah.
Maybe, you know, that's a way for them to process, but it's also a break from the players for the players, instead of doing real crunchy combat and being like, okay, I really gotta lock in and like,
it's a novel experience. If you can present a different game or like a, you know, a mini game in that situation, you're like, okay, I can set this aside and not worry about my like stealth bonus or whatever.
And like not worry about like what I've min-maxed and optimized my character for, and you can just have fun with it.
Yeah. Back to just like saying what you want to do and then maybe like rolling on some results table.
Right. Instead of like a skill check, it's a results table based.
Yeah. It's been a while since we talked about it, but I think like one of the greatest examples is Darkest Dungeon, a video game, which has two sort of versions of this, which deviate from the main like dungeon crawling combat structure of the game. One is the camp, so like on bigger dungeons, and I'm exclusively talking about the first one. I don't know anything about how the second game handles this stuff, but in the first one, if you're on a long dungeon and you have in one of your, you know, item slots, you have supplies to do camp, you can camp. And in camp, characters' moves change to a completely different set of actions, the camp actions, where they can interact with each other, where they can heal relax and reduce stress that's built up, chance to remove, you know, annoying debuffs or other things that you pick up in the dungeon. And then when you're done, you go to sleep for the night, finish the dungeon, go back directly into dungeon gameplay. And then there's the other one, which is the, like, it's mixed with like town and party management stuff when you go back to town, because one of the things you're doing is like renovating the town, building the town back up. But one of the things that's doing is unlocking
stress relief
and health or like affliction or disease treatment options, and training. Training is, we talked about that, training to get better at something.
Yeah.
In town, as you go to these different, like, you know, the bar has gambling and drinking and a brothel, and then the sanitarium has medical treatment but also stress treatment. And then the smithy can upgrade your gear, and it all talks to each other and talks to like the characters in the game in a really fun way that, you know, feels of a piece with the whole thing, but is distinctly different from the like the combat, the stressful dungeon crawling part.
And like some games kind of have a mini game built in, and then like then you can make the argument, if it's built into the core rule set, is it a mini game?
Yeah.
And like, yes, it can be, like in that Darkest Dungeon example, because like D&D or in a lot of other games, right, you can take a long rest or a short rest that do have some mechanical effects, and like you can heal and get your spell slots back, but like that's kind of it. And like it's up to the party to like, are we going to spend time talking about how we camp, or like are we going to role play a discussion our characters have over camp or whatever? A quick little like mini game to do that. This one, and I forgot what it is, because a friend of the pod, Brian, was talking to me about it, where like there's a little cooking mini game where like it's a bunch of like D6s and like a D12 or something, or like your meal dice depends on the ingredients that you can find with D6s or something like that. And like it doesn't have a super big effect. Like you can do a long rest and heal, but like if you cook a really good meal and like are able to find really good ingredients, you might get a plus one to like your next roll or maybe a certain type of roll, something like that. So like having those mini games in like a core rule set still count as a mini game in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. The licensed Fallout pen and paper RPG, which is really heavily based on Fallout 4. And you could say a lot about Fallout 4 being a bad role-playing game and a bad story. But I think it one thing it succeeded at is having a lot of really fun crafting stuff. So the licensed pen and paper game basically ported that to pen and paper. And I would call that, you know, the same thing. That's like a direct way for players to interact with the stuff that they've picked up in the world and their characters by, like, you know, building a better gun or getting better armor or whatever. But it's an opportunity to, like, hey, we're going to spend the first half of this session look at these pages or print out, you know, print out the tables for crafting mechanics and, you know, what you want to build and getting really, like, nitty-gritty with your gear and being like, okay, do I have enough, you know, do I have enough wood and adhesive and screws to put the scope on or whatever. And it being gamified that way makes it a really cool way to engage with like the lulls in storytelling. You know, we just took down this scary robot bunker and we learned something about where we need to go next, but before we do that we should, you know, have a little break. And the act of like recovering and preparing, which you can just, like, hand wave away with a couple sentences of narrative.
Yeah.
And we have advised that in the past to just, like, don't do the boring part. But what if it wasn't boring, I guess, right. is essentially what we're saying.
Yeah.
And that's like, kind of the core of this episode is, like, what if it's not boring, don't skip it.
Right.
Make a thing out of it.
And, like, yeah, if you make a thing out of it, it becomes not boring. Right. Because would it become when you are doing it, we think that like there can be some narrative benefits to putting some like extra attention on these kind of lulls, as we call them, or you know, downtime.
Dude, go ahead.
As I mentioned somewhere up top, it's a plan. It can be a chance for like players to express what they want to do and like kind of have fun with their character that doesn't like relate directly to their stats. Like, you know, I might be really bad at strength, but I can still take part in a strength contest.
Yeah,
because it's a mini game and like it's not going to rely heavily on like how combat works in this system.
You can
have fun at a carnival.
Right. And maybe even like win a little prize or lose some money. And that's still, you know, well, you still blew off steam. You still like, you still enjoyed the time and like role played in character. And so,
So it's a chance for players to mess around with their character in a way that they're not allowed to, well, not allowed. When they don't necessarily feel like, oh, that's the best decision I, you know, could make. It's like, because I can't just walk up a guy and punch them because, like, I'm bad at it. I would get stabbed or something like that.
I think there's a learning opportunity in doing something like this. A learning opportunity for player characters who, you know, maybe are new to or not super comfortable with like the role-playing part, but they like the game part, to get away from the idea of like, oh, well, I have a negative modifier in strength or charisma, so I just don't do those things.
Right, exactly.
To try and like, to encourage and like train them to not let that be the, to not let those be like restrictive guardrails on how they play their character, because you can always try that stuff. And you, I think, should be, it's not stated in very many other games, but it's stated really clearly in Mothership. And I know we've talked about this at least once, maybe a couple times. It states really clearly in Mothership that your stats are not like the...
Everything you do is this.
It's not like a really, really accurate representation of who your character is physically and mentally. It's just a little bit of like waiting of chance. It waits chance one way or the other. Right.
And under extreme pressure. Like, this is how your character functions when, like, a monster is attacking them.
Yeah. And so, like, getting players to think that way and just, like, pretend in character as their character would do.
Mm-hmm.
And be a little bit set free from what they might have even unconsciously be considering to be, like, shackles,
right?
Because based on their stats,
you hear it all the time. A player's like, I don't really like how I made my character.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, interesting, because you're not able to do the things you want to do, and it's like, I just feel like I can only do one thing. And mm-hmm. it's like, the problem,
but you can do everything, you can try to do everything,
you just won't succeed as much mm-hmm. as that one thing that you statted out for, and like. That's not bad, because failure is an important part of any story. So, like, these mini games can, like, help you explore that and, like, explore ideas that players might not otherwise, because they're like, why would I try to sneak past him when I can just stab him with my sword? Yeah. I have a greater chance of just killing him than sneaking past him.
It's a tricky thing that I was thinking. As soon as I put it on the table, I was like, ooh. When we were playing our Dangerous Spaceman retro sci-fi campaign, and the experience system that I implemented was, if you fail by a certain degree, like, it's gonna be bad because you failed, but that's when you get an experience point.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately I was like, oh no, what this incentivizes is players trying to
do crazy, like, 1 in 100 chance. Yeah,
trying to do things that they know they're bad at for the sake of, because they're more likely to not succeed in those things, and farm XP that way, and then use that XP, not even to, like, you know, keep trying bad charisma moves, and then, or presence in Dangerous Spaceman, whatever. Keep trying bad attempts at that to, like, farm XP to make the things that they're actually good at even better. And that is, so something that a mini game that can still give you benefits, like, it could get you away from those things, mm-hmm. right? It could put you in a situation where you're like, okay, the thing that I'm good at is this, or the thing that I'm bad at because I'm trying to farm XP is this, so that's what I want to try to do. It can, if you put a different game system, a different little interactive mini game in front of them to fill up this downtime, you can get away from that, both versions of that. The one where, like, oh, I'm bad at this, so I'll just never do it. And, you know, the one where they're trying to cheese it. Because it's not necessarily based on the...
your character stat.
Yeah, the numbers on the character sheet.
Yeah. As an aside, do you feel like people did try to cheese it a lot in Dangerous Spaceman?
Not really, but I saw the trap. As soon as I put it there, okay. I saw the trap that it was for me, or for any game master using a similar system. And I think the experience system that I stole from Elden Ring for Shattered Moon was much better, because it wasn't a level. It was specific things that you had to pay for, and you earned those by just doing stuff as a party. I don't think it worked badly, and I still think it's a cool thing that, like, you gain experience for trying stuff, and you're more likely to fail if you try things that your character sheet says you're bad at. It because those numbers break one way, a bad faith actor could abuse that system.
Yeah, I guess maybe we should find an episode to really...
to talk about experience and
dig into that more, because, I mean, yeah, you're right. A bad actor could definitely try to abuse that. I disagree that it would actually work, though. I think, and one, keeping to the code, right, the Bushido code. But then also just Dangerous Basemen was so punishing that...
That's true.
You really couldn't afford... to fail
if you're like,
well, 6 times in a row.
I know I'm bad at this, so I'm going to try. I'm like, okay, you might fall, and there might be like a dinosaur down there to eat you or something.
And because, I mean, and like also, I failed plenty fine trying the things I was good at.
That's true. Yeah. It just like the...
But I get it. The incentive is there.
Right.
Like if you can figure out a way... to avoid the punishment of the bad role.
You could have built a character, you could have rolled up your stats and been like, okay, I got a -3. I'm going to put that here in smarts.
Yeah.
And use that. Like, I'm always going to try a smarts thing. Right. What is smarts?
Okay, I'm going to touch
every computer that I find.
Or I have a scanner, which requires a smarts roll to calibrate it. So, like, every chance I get,
I'm going to be rolling negative. Yeah, -3 on everything, trying to farm XP, and then I'm never going to put those level ups
into smarts.
I'm going to put them in guns or whatever.
Yeah.
Is... like, the exploit was there, and I saw that hole in it as soon as I gave it to the party.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like anyone abused it or even really tried to abuse it.
Yeah.
But I perceived potential exploit as soon as I did it.
Yeah. Which is an argument for making a mini game and gamifying it. Outside of
what your core character stats are, and you know, getting away from initiative and attack bonuses and spell slots, being like, tell me what you want to do, roll on a separate results table, and maybe your modifiers could play into that somehow.
Yeah,
but not in the expected way,
where
it, you know, restricts you or leads to an exploit.
Yeah. Well, so that was a fun aside.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about the narrative benefit.
Yeah. Let's start that bullet. I think we're...
Well, I think we were already kind of halfway
through. We were kind of in it.
We were talking about exploring ideas when
came up. Did we kind of skip this, though? The chance for the players to take the reins? Because
I hit it.
Did you?
Yeah. What do you have
explicitly? Yeah. Well, just I like opportunities to throw that to the players and to, like, you know, as a game master, you're playing the world, like that's your character, but there's a ton of blank spots in that because obviously you haven't thought of everything. And so I love it when it like naturally comes up, or when it's like built into the mechanics to like kick that to the players. I love it when it's kicked to me as a player, and I love when I'm the game master and I can be like, well, you tell me. And assuming good faith on the part of your participants, I'm going to put that in the game. You tell me, it's in the game now. That's wonderful, I think, when, you know, because also players don't usually get to do that. They usually have to react to what you give them, and they're asking you questions about the way things are, or what stuff looks like, or is there this in this place, is there such and such around here. But if you set aside this narrative lull as an opportunity to explore something else and then kick it to them,
I think the best example I can come up with for this to illustrate this is like doing a market mini game.
Because
like that is oftentimes where me as a game master, and like I don't do it anymore because it never really worked. I'd kick it to the players and be like, you guys are in the market.
It was a pitfall in our early days when we were playing Torg, and we were, you know, like, okay, split up and do a market scene.
Yeah.
Well, now the party's split. We're still resolving everything with the normal roll system, which means stuff takes a while. and is also limiting. Like, it's creatively limiting when you're not in the combat space. That's what the rules in most RPGs are mainly about.
Right, yeah.
And the rules get a lot softer and more forgiving, but also, like, nebulous and hard to interpret when you leave the dungeon.
Yeah.
Whatever the equivalent of that may be, when you leave the spaceship, when you leave the wasteland, whatever, and return to a town, whatever the equivalent of that may be, the built-in game system, you know, loses a lot of frame rate in there.
Right, and I think because, like, Mothership said it really well, bringing another Mothership reference in is, like, you know, when to call for a roll.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are, in Mothership specifically, and I think we hit that pretty hard when we were doing our review and just talking about Mothership. But I love their, like, when to ask for a roll. There's, like, there's a time element. If your players have, if the characters have an infinite amount of time to solve the problem.
The first thing when Mothership is like, when to ask for a roll, and I've tried to, like, live by this, is don't.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. If any of these things, don't. Or if not any of these things. Yeah, if not any of these narrow things, don't call for a roll.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no time constraint. Well, they get it. Just say how long it takes.
Right? Like, if, yeah. So, and, like, if there's a sense, if, not a sense of danger, but, what was the one about, like, being dramatic? Uncertainty, I think, is what it was.
Yeah, if the results, if the results are pregnant with dramatic uncertainty, mm-hmm. you ask for a roll there. If they're contested by another character, that's when you ask for a roll.
Right. Or if they don't have the tools to solve the problem straight on.
And they're trying to improvise a solution.
Yeah.
Really, really good, like, philosophical game master direction.
Right. Because, like, that is what, the mechanics, I think, for any game system are largely built around.
Is that crunch part.
Is helping you with those.
Right? It's for, like, moments of friction.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in a scene where there's very little friction.
Right, like a marketplace.
It only adds friction to adhere to that part of the system.
Right. So, like, gamifying the marketplace, I think, is a perfect example of this. Because you can give the players the reins and be like, what do you want to go look for in the marketplace? And maybe there's, like, some roll result tables where it's just like, roll a d6 and, like, you know, I want to look for weapons. Okay, well, here's a weapons chart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hand weapons or ranged weapons, right? And then, like, you know, there can be many different market stalls, right? But, like, you don't, as a game master, have to come up with every answer.
Mm-hmm.
You can let the players kind of put out what they want, and then, like, I don't know, do you find it? And, like, that was the pitfall when we were doing Torg. It'd be like, I don't know, what do you want? Oh, I want to look at the weapon stall. Okay, roll me a perception to see if you find one. And if you fail the roll, you don't find one. It's like, you could probably find one. If you walked around the market, like, it's not going to be the city of Denver size market. So, like, you're probably going to be able to find one if you spend an hour there. So, a quick little gamification, and then that way, you also don't get locked in on one player and be like, well, I want to bargain, so I'm going to roll all these dice while everybody else is just checking out on their phones and being like,
I'm so bored. And that's a risk with, you know, gamifying these things is like, well, this doesn't involve me. I'm in a separate scene. You have essentially split the party.
Oh, well, I was arguing that gamifying it will make it go a lot quicker.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah. If you don't.
Yeah.
If you don't kind of zoom out a little bit and turn this scene into a, like, well, tell me what's there. You tell me what's there.
You tell
or
me
roll
what's there.
Roll here and, you know, tell me what you're after.
Tell me what you're looking for. Give me three rolls.
Yeah.
And we'll figure it
out. And you could ask everyone to do that at the same time and then, you know, like, whip around the table rather than treating it like, you know, like it's normal turns and normal rolls and stuff. And that's, you know, I think that's a huge pitfall of the sort of like the big main RPGs. And even like Torg, which is not a big main popular RPG, but it's what we started with. It was, you know, it was big and in depth, like a D&D.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just following the rules. And honestly, there might have been something in those books to gamify, to like zoom out and streamline gamifying like lulls, yeah, and stuff. I, you know, and we just didn't utilize it. Maybe didn't even know it was there. I don't remember. But yeah, just,
I feel fairly confident there wasn't, but
it could have been in one of the Realm books.
Well,
instead of,
I read the what did I fucking call that? What was the Egypt one?
The Nile Empire.
I read that one pretty much cover to cover.
But maybe the Isle one had a specific like market, sure,
yeah,
rules, I guess, you know, or right, festival rules or, yeah, something. Yeah. And we didn't go there.
Fair enough. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to discuss is like the giving a mini game as a kind of way to keep, well, to give the players a little bit of break from like, you know, the min maxing of their like full stat block and like in danger of death. But it's also kind of a way that like gives an activity to kind of focus around, and like in character, you can kind of like talk about like the plan, and it's like, okay, we know where we're going next, but we're going to take a little break from like the, you know, bandit camp that we just went through.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we got to go, I don't know, into the forest to find the temple or whatever. Right. And it's like, okay, we can have a little break and like do a long rest, but like make a meal and like, you know, maybe sharpen weapons or something like that. And then, like, in character, players can kind of, you know, I guess just, like, process, you know, stuff. And, like, they kind of get, they can bring in their backstory, right? Because we're all about that. Like, never seems to be the right moment to, like, bring in backstory in the middle of a firefight.
Mm.
You know, not the right moment.
Yeah.
But, like, while you're sharpening everybody's weapons, you know, maybe my character remarks on yours is like, wow, this is a interesting sword. I haven't seen one like it before.
Yeah.
And then you get a chance to
tell you about it, because who doesn't want to talk about their sword? You sword guys are always so obsessed with your swords. What's that from?
I believe it's...
That's from something.
I feel like it's Fiona from Fiona and Cake, no?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it was an Adventure Time thing. I don't know. We shouldn't... if we don't know, we shouldn't waste... Someone hold on. What that's from.
All right, and we're back, and we're figured out what that's from. They're going to take it out in post because it was a long, meandering, you know, 20-minute conversation. Okay, so... Backstory... while your characters are doing something and the players are like kind of doing something, right, where they're just like, you know, thinking about what they're gonna roll for or whatever in this mini game, I think it's a great opportunity because like you kind of get your mind doing something simple, right? Like you know, I don't know, doodling while you're listening to a lecture or something like that,
you know? Shower principle when you're like, when you're doing something mundane that doesn't take up a lot of your like cognitive bandwidth, then the rest of your brain is, you know, in the background working on stuff. And that's why, you know, like, yeah, you're having a long bathroom break and suddenly you are like, I've cracked it. I've had an idea, you know. It comes from, or yeah, like inspiration can come from moments of, I guess, like relative inactivity.
Yeah. And I think because giving your players a little simple mini game to do, they get a little bit of time to process the combat like that just happened out of, like, real people get to do this. Mm-hmm. And then, like, then they can think about what that means to their character. Like, maybe my character didn't like how we killed every single one of the bandits, even mm-hmm. though some were, and some were trying, some to, run were
trying
away.
To run away, but we I shot like them. That and, I don't know. I think I'm going to bring that to the group and mm-hmm. talk about the way we handle stuff.
Right. Because if you just skip on to the next fight, you don't get any time to think about that as a player.
You're just gonna kill
now you're focused. Yeah. You're focused on, like, how do we survive this fight, and, like, you know, how do I best use the stats and my equipment, and not check in with your character's feelings.
There's another opportunity here to shout out Darkest Dungeon, because the video game Darkest Dungeon does that for you.
Yeah,
there's just, like, you know, there's a list of quirks and, like, foibles and character traits about your character, which can be positive or negative. And even the positive ones usually have, like, a slant to them. The game does that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, you're a ruins explorer. Really great. I forget what that does specifically, but it makes you better at operating in this one specific dungeon. But that takes up one of your slots, and if that slot is taken up and you're not in the ruins anymore, then, you know, you're less effective in other regions of the dungeon than you could potentially be. And I'm not saying translate the entire system of Darkest Dungeon into tabletop for use with whatever you're playing, but maybe, like, you know, perusing the Wikipedia on Darkest Dungeon for the character quirks and stuff.
Yeah, conceptual ideas.
You could get a lot of good ideas, and you could just role play them rather than
mechanic size.
Yeah, having them all have to be, like, mechanically reinforced. But you could come out of a dungeon with an idea like that, and, like, I'm a little gun shy when I'm fighting this particular enemy, because I was in death saves at the end of that dungeon, and I don't know, I'm like, I'll play my character a little differently the next time we fight giant spiders or whatever, because I didn't like that.
Right. And you need that moment to realize that your character didn't like that. Right. So I think, minigames can have these kind of intangible benefits, as well as, like, you know, actual mechanical rewards for, like, sharpening your weapons, you get +1 damage.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also have these intangible, you know, moments of storytelling and you know, exploration of ideas and, like, you know, character thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
But all that being said, making a case for doing this.
Yeah.
There are still times when you should skip it, right? So this next segment is called Skip It or Rip It. Skip or Rip. So just want to highlight some, like, cases of when it would be a really good idea and when it would be a not so good idea, right?
Yeah.
Running successful, like, downtime or lulls with minigames requires player buy-in.
Yeah.
If your full party does not really buy in to, like, engaging in the minigame, then it's going to be a snooze fest for some, and kind of, you know, takes the whole group kind of out of it.
Right. If you, like, is it worth doing, or should we just get back to the next dungeon? If your players are disinterested in it to the point where you could just, like, give them each a filled out note card where they check what box they do, and then they hand it back to you, and you're like, great, okay, so everybody, this is what happened to you, you get this. Mm-hmm. If that's how quickly it could happen, and the only thing that they would care about is, like, do I get any, like, XP or, like, you know, statistical benefit from doing this, I don't know, maybe just don't get back to the next thing. Because, if players don't care, if there's not buy-in to this to this part of the fantasy, then just stick with the part of the fantasy that they are interested in.
Yeah.
And be like, yep, you put your gold in the bank and
you take a long rest, you get your health back.
And next dungeon.
Yeah. Another reason to skip it is it is an extra burden on the GM.
Yep.
They got to come up with a little game.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, like Shadow Dark, it's a, it is a little section in the book, and it tells you right there how to do it. But if you're trying to hack something into another game, well, you're going to have to do that. And then you're going to have to decide based on, like, what activities are listed or what benefits come from it. Or, like, does that fit? Is it does it, like, numerically scale correctly? Are you going to accidentally give someone, you know, a plus five buff to something in a game system where a plus three is the max that anyone should have? You know, yeah, what is the scale of benefit and reward? You probably, you're going to have to do some game design.
Right.
And
balancing.
And balancing and thinking about it.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you don't feel like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're not interested because you're really excited about the next dangerous thing in the wilderness that they're going to go deal with.
Yeah. That being said, though, a reason to rip it is material, like, rewards.
Yeah.
That are more easily, like, given and without breaking the balance, right? Easier way to reward good role-playing and be like, yeah, sure, you can get a plus one to your next role.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's not really a game-breaker, right?
And something that comes from something the players did without having to, like, do a whole, you know, to do multiple combat encounters or to travel really far and then, like, not get the reward depending on what game system you're playing. Maybe you don't get your XP until you get back to town with the gold, because that is because it's a treasure-based XP system. And maybe the thing that they just did was more narrative than treasure, but, like, they didn't get that much treasure out of it. Like, oh, dang, we did all that. Well, this is an opportunity to
increase their winnings by doubling down at the casino.
Yeah, even those scales a little bit. Because, yeah, like, off a corpse in a dungeon is not the only place to get better armor necessarily, right?
Yeah, and, like, there's another reason to rip it, is it can be fun, because, like, what the fuck are you going to do with all that gold?
Because,
like, most games aren't set up to where you go get gold, and then you go get slightly better gear to go get more gold, right? Most games are like, you get pretty good shit, and usually looting gets you much better gear than buying.
Yeah.
So what are you doing with all that gold?
Yeah.
Besides, like, oh, well, like, we spend a night at the inn, 10 gold away.
Yeah.
Right? Do something fun with it. Go to the carnival.
Yeah.
Or the casino.
Mm-hmm. Invest.
Invest.
Invest in a shipping, shipping venture.
Yeah, so it can be a fun way to add, or it can be a good way to add some fun into it. And then also another reason to rip the shit that we were just talking about.
The narrative.
The narrative benefit.
Yeah.
And, like, the kind of intangible benefits of, like, taking a beat but still being engaged.
Yeah. Of characters progressing in their, like, personal narrative arcs because they've, you know, had time to, like, process things that happened to them, or they make choices in this carousing that, like, reflect, oh, I've, you know, Darkest Dungeon again. I'm really fucking traumatized from how dangerous and fucked up it is to go back into that dungeon day after day. So I need to drink about it. You know, I'm addicted. And, you know, if it's in real life, you should seek some help. But in a game, play it, you know, play it for fun. Be a dramatic, sloppy mess. Be a little bit of a burden on your player characters. Not too much. Don't be a butthead.
Don't be a butthead.
But, you know, fun it up.
Yeah. Recap.
Okay.
So we were talking about gamifying lulls and, like, downtime. What is a lull? So think D&D downtime. Any moment in between, like, action, which isn't necessarily combat, but, like, you know, strict turn order or something like that. That's kind of a lull, right? Narrative lulls. they can be used to kind of shift tone, but also you can get material rewards, right? Mini games, we advocate for mini games because it is a way to kind of keep engaged without being fully engaged. It's easier to balance rewards if like they're not directly related to the core stats, because the core stats you have to like fit in there and make sure, you know, you're not accidentally overpowering your characters. So if it's just like roll 3d6s, don't add any stats to
it. Not based on, right. Yeah, not based on character attributes or, you know, modifiers.
Right. And so, yeah, taking that kind of beat where like you kind of, your mind's working on something, but like you're not focusing on it, allows you to think about, how does my character feel? Check in with your character. Like, they probably just went through a traumatic experience. So, like, how are they doing?
Yeah.
And then we went through some reasons why to skip, like, a mini game in a lull, or why to rip a mini game in a lull, right? Skip if you don't have full buy-in from your players. Like, if your players don't give a shit and they're like, I don't know, give me my bonus.
Yeah.
I don't care how I get it. Give it to me. Probably just skip it.
Yeah.
If
just
you
as give them their level up or whatever.
Mm-hmm. If you as the GM like can't find the time, or you know, because it is an extra thing you have to do. Mini games are not in the core rules. The book might provide them, like in Shadowdark.
Mm-hmm. And I would say whatever you're playing, just look it up online. I'm sure if it's not officially supported, someone has written something.
Right, and you can also mix match. You can use the Shadowdark carousing rules in D&D.
Yeah, just maybe
little,
you know,
tweak.
Maybe tweak to the you know what the bonuses are.
Yeah,
or the coin values or whatever.
Reasons to rip it. There's a narrative benefit, that kind of intangible benefits. It's fun. You get to do things that like your character isn't built for. Mm-hmm. You just got to have fun with it. And then you also get, like, some material rewards without totally breaking the balance of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good recap. So, that'll about do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. 2HGM.com is going offline, so just head on over to Patreon/2HGM. That's where all our stuff is. Everything right now is free. The only thing we have up there is a tip jar. But that is how you join our community, participate in like the Discord and the occasional actual play stuff that we do. There's opportunity to get in on that, as well as like suggest episodes or things that you want to talk about. We'll probably make an episode about it if someone's got a question or a thing that they want to get into. By the time this episode goes up, we'll have a new thing on Patreon. It's Shattered Moon fantasy game that we played. Well, we wrote it, but it's going to be up there for just free download. And yeah, so you know, check out the Patreon if you like the show.
Thank you to the Burning Saviors for their song, the use of their song, Pontilla's Finest, as the intro and outro to our show. And we will see you next time.
See ya.